In the Kingdom of Nye, from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255 or call Art on the Wildcard Line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is, and Joe McGonigal is here. He's our nation's first remote viewer, 001 in the military. He's definitely a heavyweight. If you have questions about remote viewing, or what Joe has remote viewed, then we are available for you. And the lines, of course, are totally jammed. So all I can say is, yeah, I almost stepped on that. Keep trying to get through. Anyway, more of this directly ahead. We'll be right back. And I've got several questions about shows we've done in the last couple days, you know, the ones that talked about the Russian weapons. I wonder if that's something he can comment on. We'll find out in a moment. Back to Joe McGonigal. You holding up okay, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
All right, good. I had the highest-ranking Soviet defector to ever come out of the Soviet Union on my show a week or so ago. And then I had a lieutenant colonel on the other evening, and both of these gentlemen said that the Russians are, and for a long time have been, experimenting with, in fact, causing earthquakes. Is this an area that you cannot comment on?
I don't know a lot about that area, quite frankly. I can understand where they might be saying that, but some of the reasons why they might be saying that, I'm not sure would imply a weapon system of any kind.
Uh-huh. By the way, folks, if you want to read more about Joe, and I'm just looking at one little a part of his website right now. We've got it linked. Under remote viewing, you will find the definition of remote viewing, history with Stargate, examples of remote viewing, frequently asked questions, research and development, remote viewing applications, books, journals, publications, related websites, publicity and media, remote viewing services. Now, that's just one little section of your website. So you just got this up. It's pretty comprehensive, eh?
Yeah, there's still some areas that are under construction, but the area on examples, there are some simulated intelligence examples there that are very good. And, of course, there's information on my books and my personal bio and business bio and that sort of thing.
Are there really things that you know that if you were to tell, you'd end up in jail?
Well, simply because I signed agreements and I gave my word that there were certain things I wouldn't disclose, I won't. There are a lot of things that are very sensitive, and part of their sensitivity deals with our ability to know them. And so just exposing them would
expose the ability
to collect information there.
Yeah, but see, the implication there is, Joe, clearly the implication is that it's still going on.
Well, no, not necessarily.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, if you're successful at doing something in defense of the nation, you certainly don't want anyone to know that you're having that degree of success. If your successes in the past were dependent upon additional methodologies that were used, you don't want to show that connection. One of the things I do want to say, Art, I don't want to leave the listeners with the opinion that, you know, I was the only remote viewer.
Oh, no.
I want to say that within the time period of the project, there were probably a little over 24 viewers, and there were many viewers as equally as good as I ever was and or am. And,
oh, actually, I'm glad you brought this up. Of course there are, and I've interviewed many of them.
That project could not have existed based on just the efforts of a single individual in any case.
And, right.
It was always a team effort, and everyone played an equal role in terms of their degree of involvement and importance and their support, and many, many people essentially laid their careers on the line and such as a result of that. And I think the listeners just need to know that.
Having said all that, I've got a very serious question for you. I really, really love the subject of remote viewing, and I have therefore interviewed many remote viewers. There is a terrible, terrible schism in what once was a very tight community. There have been some real problems that have developed between people who were in that program since the ending, the official ending anyway, of that program. There's a lot of animosity. How come?
Well, I think a lot of it is not really generated between the actual people involved. I think it's generated by a lot of misconceptions by the media. And a lot of what the media has put into print or said essentially has sensationalized some of the statements and taken them out of context that people might have said. And as a result, there's a lot of things that are believed to be true that aren't. As an example, there's a belief that at some point I made a statement that remote viewing or remote viewers, not everyone can be a remote viewer, not everyone is psychic. And that is exactly 180 degrees out of kilt from what I actually said. What I actually said was that there is evidence in the lab that every human being that's ever walked through our door displays some capacity of being psychic.
Gee, how does that one get turned around?
I don't know. I think a lot of people ask questions, but they never listen. And what they do listen to, they listen to within the context of how they would like to hear it sound in there.
Boy, do I know that's true.
So, that's happened with me quite frequently, and I know that it's happened with others. And when you don't have direct contact with some of the people and you're not able to, you know, answer those questions directly, a lot gets assumed, and it's really unfortunate.
There were in the military very specific protocols. Some remote viewers have strayed from or modified those protocols. In your view, is that a reasonable thing to be doing, or does it dilute what accuracy was obtained with those very strict protocols?
Well, the way I'd like to answer that is that absolutely, if the protocols, which actually lend the scientific truth or validity to remote viewing, if those are strayed from, that absolutely does dilute whether or not it's remote viewing. However, having said that, you have to understand that there are a whole lot of different methodologies that are being used that operate within that protocol.
Are there any that you're aware of that have been developed or modified that are superior in results to what was done in the military?
I don't know of any specific methodology that's superior over another. I do know that some will probably be a little bit more consistent than others. They all pretty much produce the same accuracy level with when you're using a well-experienced or well-selected remote viewer.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all pretty much the same. It's dependent upon the individual and simply what they like to do. Everybody brings their own natural talent to it. And since everyone's psychic, we have a tendency to go with what works for us.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Joe McGonigal. Hi.
Yes. Hi, Art. Calling from Seattle, listening to you on Como 1000.
The big one up there, yes.
Yes. Mr. McGonagall, I wanted to ask you, I read a book on the about the Montauk Project. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am, somewhat.
Yes, and I read a section of it where they did experiments to affect weather changes, and also they did experiments on sound frequency to see how it affected people and animals. And also, in the book, it said they also did experiments in time travel. And the reason the Long Island location was closed down was due to an entity coming through during one of the time travel experiments that created havoc, and they couldn't get rid of, so,
Really? That's quite a story. Joe, do you know anything about all that?
Well, one of the things I like to do, Art, is when I read something, I like to check it out. And I read a number of things about the Montauk Project, and what was implied is that many of the things that were used or developed in those projects still exist in terms of towers and buildings and tunnels and all that sort of thing. So I actually personally went to Montauk and looked for those things, and none of them exist. So I have a little trouble, you know, buying some of the other things that were said as a result. I think it's quite possible that there have been experiments done with regard to sound and the effects of sound on people or animals. There's some literature that supports that. I believe also that there is probably a considerable amount of research and stuff that was done with regard to the earlier foundations of radar towards the end of the Second World War, mid to end of the Second World War out of Montauk. But beyond that, I haven't found much evidence for anything else.
Implication being that there was some, at least, nugget of truth to the Philadelphia experiment?
You know, the Philadelphia experiment's a really interesting thing. In reality, what they actually did is they did build some very large degaussers in the dock areas there during the war because metal ships riding through the water build up electrostatic charges and make them very vulnerable to electromagnetic mines.
Right.
And so they would degauss these ships, and we now know that certain kinds of electromagnetic wave fronts hitting the temporal lobes of the brain create a sense of having an entity standing next to you or some very bizarre effects. And I can conclude from that probably a lot of the things that have been said about the Philadelphia experiment might be true in the minds of people who were degaussed. It's also quite possible that in attempts to build something that would essentially wipe out a radar system, they could conceivably have built a very large unshielded microwave tube on the deck of one of those ships and cooked a few people. I mean, you know, nothing's beyond, you know, the possibility. So I think out of that sort of collage of things, you could hypothesize a number of things, and some of that being the, you know, what's been written about the Philadelphia experiment.
Exactly. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Joe McGonagall. Hello.
Hi, this is Dan in Virginia.
Hello.
Yes, Joe, have you had any contact with either spiritual entities or either ETs during your remote viewing?
Oh, very, very good question. Yeah.
That is a good question, Art. I personally have had a couple experiences where I had a sense that I was either visited by or in the presence of some form of entity. The difficulty is determining what exactly that is. I'm not one to jump to a conclusion that it's alien simply because it doesn't look like me. I try to hold an open mind in that regard, and so I suggest that it might be alien, but it might also be a time traveler. It could also be a construct of my own mind in some way. So I'm not exactly sure what it was or where it came from, but I do know that there was a reason, based on the information that was exchanged, there's a reason to believe that there's some validity to that entity.
If, Joe, somebody were to remote view you, would you be aware of that fact?
Probably not. And again, I go back to the 25 years of research that's been done in the lab. There's quite a bit of evidence that In some cases, you can display the ability to determine that something's been remote viewed at a specific time or place, and that would include individuals. But that happens very spontaneously. The last person that you ever want to ask for any decision with regard to remote viewing is the remote viewer. Even while they're in the act of remote viewing, they're generally incapable of making decisions that are going to be accurate, especially the yes-no kind of decisions.
Yeah. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Joe McGonigal. Hi.
Good evening, Art. Good evening, Joe. It's an honor to speak with you. This is Eric in Austin, Texas, listening to you on KJFK 98.9 FM.
That's the way to do it.
Thank you. Joe, with regard to a miniature conversation that you and Art had earlier regarding the effects of weather and the weather experiments that Art has just completed, it would seem to me that if you compare that to the surgical instrument, I mean, both would take a heck of a lot of physical or what would seem kind of sign compliant or compliant to the electromagnetic field, an incredible amount of energy in order to accomplish either one of those. But yet you said it was possible that, say, like for the weather experiments, that people could subconsciously or physically affect the weather. How would that be done? Can you clarify that?
Well, he even suggested that it was equally possible that I had, in effect, psychically viewed something that would occur and therefore announced that particular experiment.
I'd like to go back to that Russian experiment.
All right.
And sort of give that as an explanation for what I mean. The Russians did a very interesting experiment. They took 24 mice and tattooed them with numbers 1 through 24. And then they had a participant who was not going to be in their experiment select out which would be control mice and which 12 would be target mice. And they alone knew that. They kept the information, and of course they took the mice and put them in all in a cage together, and then they had a psychic 3,000 kilometers away target them to try to raise the aggression level in the targeted mice. At the end of 6 months, they killed all the mice and analyzed the chemicals in the brain and were able to sort the 12 mice that were aggressive, that were pre-selected as aggressive, into one column that was accurate.
So are you saying that would be more of a telepathic or even psychokinetic influence?
Well, their assumption was that it was psychokinetic, but in reality it may have been that the person who made the selection of the two groups at the very beginning, knowing what the outcome needed to be, made the appropriate selection up front.
You're a very, very careful man. Hold on, Joe. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll do another segment. Joe McGonigal is my guest. He's our nation's first remote viewer. There were others. All right, here we go again. Once again, back to Joe McGonigal. Joe, you've got several books out. Is there any that you would like to particularly plug right now?
The new book, of course, which will probably be in bookstores the first week of December. The Ultimate Time Machine is the new one. Mind Trek, of course, is a good primer for remote viewing if people would really like to know something about how I integrated a lot of what I learned about remote viewing.
You've had four major heart attacks.
That's correct. Two open heart surgeries.
And you had a near-death experience as well. Was that during one of them?
No, that was back in 1970 while I was overseas.
Describe it. In other words, did you actually clinically cease?
What actually happened is I started feeling badly. I ordered a before dinner drink at a guest house in Austria.
Right.
And I took a few sips and started feeling very badly and excused myself from the restaurant so I wouldn't be ill in front of anyone. And when I hit the door, I collapsed on the sidewalk and went into convulsions. I swallowed my tongue. And, of course, you can't breathe when that happens. And so I ceased breathing after about, 5 to 6 minutes, my heart stopped. And I was delivered to the local hospital in Germany, DOA.
DOA.
Right.
What happened to you during that time?
It was a very classic near-death experience. I watched everything from outside of my body. I watched them load me into a car and take me across the border to this hospital, and I watched them cut the clothing off my body in the emergency room and start sticking needles in me, and I became sort of bored by that. By then, I had figured out that I was dead or dying, and I started wondering what was going to happen next, and found myself falling backwards through a tunnel. At some point, I felt something warm on the back of my neck, or what I perceived to be in the back of my neck, and I turned around to see what it was, and was enveloped by a white light, which at the time I perceived to be God. I then actually did go over every event in my life up to that point, and was told that I couldn't die. I had to come back. I, of course, argued about that and had very little control over it. Suddenly sat up in a bed. I was in the hospital, and I had been comatose for some hours or days. And I began telling everybody in broken German and English about white lights and God and you can't die and that sort of thing. And wound up in a rest home as a result.
What kind of a reaction did you get?
It was a very negative one. They put me in a private rest home in Munich and did brain studies to determine how much damage I had suffered as a result of the lack of oxygen to my brain.
Really?
I immediately started trying to act normal. They let me out after about 10 days.
You realized, I guess, if you didn't let up, they'd probably have you in a jacket in a quiet place with rubber walls.
Right. Back then, you know, this was like unheard of. Nobody ever discussed this sort of thing. And they immediately thought that I had suffered irreparable brain damage.
Is your fear of death gone?
It went away during that event, and I've not had it since.
Well, you know, I'd love to experiment with that. There are people, Joe, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, who are doing experiments. In fact, I'm waiting for the results now, with possibly a dangerous drug, which I'm not going to mention. We call it Drug X. But two people with doctorates who are using a specific drug to induce NDEs. Does that concept give you the willies?
Actually, no. Historically speaking, the Greeks were known to use some very exotic poisons to take people to the level of an NDE.
Uh-huh.
It had a profound effect on some of their philosophies, as a matter of fact.
Interesting answer.
Back to the best of Art Bell.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Joe McGonigal. Hi.
Hi, this is Dan. I love your show.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Canada.
Canada, okay.
I was actually trained by one of the people that came out of Joe's program about 4 years ago on remote viewing. And Joe mentioned something a couple of years back that I'd just like to ask him about, and that had to do with the Russians' experiments. I'd heard Joe had a bypass operation, at least one, possibly more. They were actually trying to do what I would call more remote influencing or remote assassinations, like to try and stop people's hearts. And there were apparently people in the program that were having coronaries in mid-session.
Oh, yes. Is that a true story? Are there people who actually died while having sessions?
Actually, no. That's a myth. There was, in fact, one individual who was not working at the time who had come by the office and was, in fact, drinking a cup of coffee and was, as a result of another job, under a great deal of stress, and he did have a massive coronary and subsequently died. But that was not in relationship in any way to any kind of a remote viewing. You know, I think the proof's kind of in the pudding. I'm still here. My heart condition is pretty much genetic. and I've survived so far. So if their targeting mechanisms, you know, are to induce heart attacks and death, they're not doing a very good job of it.
There you are, caller.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. So you don't consider there to be any inherent danger at all?
Well, no, I don't want to be misconstrued. There is an inherent danger, and I think it comes from the person themselves. If as an example, you become involved in the paranormal or become involved in remote viewing, and you cannot integrate what you're experiencing into your belief structure. In other words, it runs counter your actual belief structure on how things work, or your theologic background, as an example. What you will actually do is create an illness in order not to participate. I've actually seen that happen with people where they really did not want to alter their belief structure, and as a result, they made themselves sick. Now, if you pay attention, you quit and go away, and you get healthy again. If you don't pay attention, the degree of sickness increases until you do. And
so you could kill yourself.
You could essentially kill yourself, exactly. I suspect that that's not just a predominant thing within the paranormal research area, but it's probably predominant throughout life. People actually find themselves in jobs or situations that they're not comfortable in, and they become so diseased with it that they actually die.
They decide to die.
Exactly.
There are many, many cases, of course, of people who, once their mate is gone, make a conscious, literally a conscious decision to die, and they
absolutely.
Perfect
example, Art. Perfect example.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Joe McGonigal. Hi.
Howdy, Michael in California.
Hi, Michael.
That Greek person, Nepenthe, I believe is what you might have been referring to. That was just a comment. And it seems perhaps that it's difficult to squeeze certain things into higher consciousness provoking situations like psychedelics or remote viewing, where it can't be used negatively because that's a condition of that dimension in which it works.
Well, let's ask about that. Joe, I like to be brutally honest with people, and I don't know that I believe that. In other words, remote viewing is a talent, a natural ability, a developed ability, a sharpened ability, and I think, like most forces, that it, if I had to guess, I'd say it could be used for good or what some might consider a negative
target. All the evidence points to the fact that whether you consider something good or evil has no effect whatsoever on the ability to remote view. So conceivably, someone who has a lot of ill intention or who is very destructive by nature can be as effective a remote viewer as someone who is not, who is more inclined to the positive or constructive. I think what's important to understand is that remote viewing is a tool, just like eyesight or smell or taste or anything else, and that we all use our capabilities, our talents, or our tools in a either destructive or constructive way, and that's pretty much up to the individual.
Yeah, that's an answer I can sure buy into. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Joe McGonigal. Hi.
Hi, yes, I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh, yes, sir.
Yes, and I had one question. In all paranormal research, in parapsychology, psychic phenomena, UFO research, etc., over the years, I've known some pretty good scientists who've been interested in this work, and they all find tremendous opposition, not because of the work, but even if they make a suggestion or set up plans to do research, there is tremendous opposition from their fellow scientists and from other people just to prevent the work from even being discussed or done. Why is that?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Primarily, I think if in fact the paranormal our psychic functioning is occurring because of a difference in our construct and how reality operates, then we, of course, are faced with having to change all of our opinions of reality or how reality operates. That can be very threatening to a lot of the baseline premises supporting other science. The other problem involves more of a personal area, in that many scientists are either, they come in one of two ilks. One is they're very wedded to some theologic idea, or they're very non-wedded to a theologic idea. In other words, they're either atheists or they're firm believers in a power that moves things. So in either case, discovering or underscoring an ability that tends to solidify the spiritual side of man or exists within a spiritual nature in man is a very threatening thing. And I think that this is where a lot of that comes from.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much for the call. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Joe McGonigal. Hi.
Hi. My question is, when I am projecting, I have a problem with being paralyzed when I'm coming back. I was wondering if...
what do you mean by projecting? Are you talking about an OBE?
Like an out-of-body experience.
Yes.
My whole body and mind goes to where I'm looking. And when I'm like in a sleep, and I become paralyzed, and the more I fight it, it's like the more I become paralyzed. And I was wondering if he has the same problem.
Well, that's really easy to answer. In part of the prelude to actual sleep, or to the processes of the body going to sleep, there is a disconnect that occurs where you mentally are wide awake and functioning, but you're disconnected in a sense physically from the rest of your body, and it translates into a form of paralysis where you think you'd like to move your arm, but it won't move, and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And that's a very normal occurrence, and it occurs with everyone who can retain consciousness long enough as they're going to sleep, or retain consciousness early enough when they're waking up to notice.
Joe, we've done extensive talking on this program about out-of-body experiences, the Monroe Institute, and on and on and on and on, a lot of guests on the subject. I've got kind of a funny story. For a few years now, as we've discussed all of this, I've come to that state where I've been paralyzed, even heard the buzzing, and frankly, I'm such a control freak that it made me nauseated, and I yanked myself out of it every single time. I could no more let that go than the man in the moon. I can't lose that kind of control, and so I've never been able to allow myself to go from that point and actually have an OBE. But I was recently in Paris, Joe, and I was lying in bed with my wife, and without any warning, without any paralysis, without any precursor of any sort, I shot up at an indescribable velocity out of my body and above the city of Paris in some kind of space. Mm-hmm. All I've been able to do is describe it as the greatest feeling of ecstasy that I have ever felt. So great, there are not words to describe it. It shocked me so badly, I snapped right back, uh-huh. and I woke my wife up, and I started telling her about it. And it's never happened before. I can't say it won't ever happen again, but it's nothing I willed to occur, knew was occurring, or had any warning about. Boom, it just happened. Now, I was completely out of my currents. I do a radio show every day. Very structured life. I was on vacation in Paris, total change. Right. That's when it happened.
Well, in fact, probably 90% of the OBEs are spontaneous with people.
Really?
Yes. In your case, I would suggest that because you were in a different place and because you were probably somewhat tired, maybe from traveling or maybe from jet lag or maybe just from
all of the
day's activities
yes.
or all
oh,
of the above.
Yes. Yes.
Right, you were probably not in as much control as you are normally. I imagine doing the radio show, you're very structured about your time. And so not being within that scenario, you had let go of that control with regard to time.
All I can say is this, you know, I know what a dream is. I've had them all my life, and I've loved many and hated many flying dreams, but always when I awaken, I say, man, cool dream. I'm
right.
absolutely
right.
aware. I'm saying all this so that the people understand that what I had was no dream. What I had was
exactly.
utterly, completely different than any dream I've had in my whole life. It was not a dream. Something real happened to me.
That's precisely the way you can tell when someone has honestly had an OBE versus a lucid dream or something that's very similar. There is no other context. It is most definitely an OBE, and it's not like any dream that anyone could ever have.
When somebody has an event like that, are they in the same realm that remote viewers use to discern the information they discern?
Generally speaking, I would say no. However, there are people who could be considered remote viewers who are in that realm simply because they're having their OBE within the confines of a remote viewing protocol. In other words, if whatever methodology you're using is happening within a remote viewing protocol, then you could consider it remote viewing.
All right. Listen, we're at the end of the hour, and I know that I should probably let you rest. I will, however, offer you one more hour if you like it. I've got it.
Okay, we can do it.
Really? Oh, excellent. The phones are going, of course, off the hook. So stay right where you are, and we'll be right back. Joe McGonigal is my guest. Remote viewer number 001 in the government's program. The one you may have seen exposed on Nightline. So we're dealing here with a heavyweight. And if you have questions for him, we'd just love to hear them. I'm Mark Bell, and this, of course, is Coast to Coast AF.